From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. Karen Stipes was around a year old when her mother went missing.
You know, I had to suffer through my whole life because of whatever happened, you know, with my mother. I wish that someone would tell me, you know, let me know what happened.
Les Rugg's son disappeared on a fishing trip.
My son, Kyle Rugg, is 20 years old. He disappeared on a Wednesday, March the 4th, 2015.
Alice Almendares' father went missing in Houston. His regular phone calls to his daughter just stopped cold.
My dad was reported missing end of June 2002.
People vanish. Right now, around 80,000 men, women, and children are missing in the United States. These are just a few of the family members of missing people we spoke to across the country.
There's no way to describe what it feels like to not know where someone is or what happened to them. The worst part about it is not knowing.
Unfortunately, some of those missing people will never come home. Like Alice's dad. His body was unidentified for 10 years and was buried as a John Doe just a few miles from his home. His daughter had no idea what happened to him for all those years. We've done a lot of reporting about Jane and John Doe's and the families they leave behind. We found that there are no national laws requiring coroners or police to enter unidentified cases into a national database that could help send them home. And the problem is growing. When we started looking at this in 2014, there were fewer than 10,000 unidentified bodies in a national database. Today, there are more than 11,000. Some are being stored in morgues, others have been buried in public cemeteries without a name. Every one of those people had a life, a story to tell. Today, we're going deep into one of those. We first brought you this story earlier this year, and later in the show, we'll let you know what's happened since it first aired. It's about a murder victim whose body was found on a mountain trail in Kentucky in 1969. Before we get started, just a quick heads up. A lot of our show is about death and dead people, so it can get a little gruesome. It's not for all listeners. Michael Schiller picks up the story in Harlan, Kentucky.
We're driving through southeastern Kentucky. It's deep in coal country near the Virginia border. We're headed to Harlan. It's in a valley surrounded by the dense forests of the Appalachian Hills. Pine Mountain to the northeast is where you'll find Little Shepherd's Trail, a single-lane mountaintop road that stretches for 40 miles, snaking along the top of a ridge. Little Shepherd Trail might sound familiar. There's a novel named after it, a Civil War epic. This is where they found Mountain Jane Doe.
On Little Shepherd Trail, the body of a young woman was discovered by a man who was picking flowers for his wife.
That's Darla Jackson.
I was born May 25th, 1969. It's possible she was murdered on the day I was born.
Darla's a former Miss Harlan County with a winning smile and bright green eyes. She's also an author and an amateur historian who's been researching this story for years.
You don't happen upon Little Shepherd Trail. You go to Little Shepherd Trail.
The body was found on a steep slope in the forest brush.
She was found about 50 feet off of the road. She had been there a week at least, maybe more. The only thing found with her was a restaurant receipt from the Cincinnati, Ohio area and a blouse or cloth found with her. She had been stabbed in the chest multiple times. No clothing on her. And it didn't take long to realize that there was no clue as to who this woman was.
Her face was completely gone. All you could see was the skull.
Bill Bowman was just out of high school when the body was found. He was working at the Appalachian Regional Hospital in the medical supplies department.
There was a very strange odor in the hospital. One of the supervisors came and asked if I was squeamish, if I would mind participating in their autopsy. And it was mostly just suit up, mask up, and stand there with a spray can of Lysol in each hand and just spray while they were doing the autopsy.
Bill wasn't trained in this type of work at all. He was simply drafted at the last minute to help the medical examiner because there was no one else around to do it.
They pretty much limed her down, put her in a bag, and that was pretty much it.
A few days later, they buried her in the same body bag.
She was taken up to this cemetery by the rescue squad. She was buried in this casket, and a small grave marker was placed for her. And that is about all we hear of her at that time.
That was pretty much a shocker for the community, you know, to find this girl like that, murdered up on this trail. Everyone was wondering, you know, what's going on? What happened to her? Why is she here? Where'd she come from?
We couldn't find anyone still alive who was there on that day of June in 1969 when they found the body. But we did find an eyewitness account from a 2009 news broadcast on the local TV station, WYMT. It's from Joe Mahan, just a couple years before he passed away. Joe owned a funeral home in town, and he was the guy who actually went and retrieved the body.
This still stays with me. I pray a lot over this, hoping that she can be identified. And maybe the killer be identified also.
Joe held a funeral service for Mountain Jane Doe. He even paid for the casket himself.
I just couldn't put that little girl in a county casket and thinking and knowing what she may have gone through with maybe on that mountainside some night.
People came from all around. They lined up outside his small red brick chapel for the funeral. And after they buried her, that was kind of it. Police had a few leads over the years that never really went anywhere. But the people of Harlan and the Kentucky State Police never forgot about Mountain Jane Doe.
This is a case that I have heard about since I was little.
Jackie Pickrell is from Harlan. She's with the Kentucky State Police.
And so whenever I came here as detective sergeant, I went and found the case just to read through it. There's just not a lot to work with in this case.
Mountain Jane Doe's case was passed down from one detective to the next for decades. Retired state police detective Ken Kreider tried to solve it in the early 90s.
The one thing that probably bugged me more than anything in my career was not being able to solve something like this, because it really matters to people.
Over the years, there were lots of theories about who Mountain Jane Doe might be and who might have killed her, but they never panned out. The case pretty much goes cold until the fall of 2000, when something happens that sets it back in motion.
I hadn't thought about her in years.
That's Darla Jackson again.
I'd gotten married, I'd had a child, I was raising a family. So this young girl that was found murdered in 69 was not even a memory, really, at the time.
Darla grew up hearing stories of Mountain Jane Doe as a kid, but those memories have faded. She's a mother now, and she's busy helping run the family business, her husband's funeral home.
So when did she come back into your life?
She came back into my life in November of 2000. My Aunt Loretta called me. She first asked me, do you remember the girl found in 1969 on Little Shepherd Trail? And I said, yeah, of course. I remember it. And she said, well, your Uncle James is saying that he may know who killed her. He wants you and I to help.
Her uncle, James Saylor, had recently moved into a trailer next to the Harlan Gas Cemetery, where Mountain Jane Doe is buried.
He says that maybe a few days later that he wakes up and he sees a girl.
He tells the same thing to Darla's aunt, Loretta Martin.
And he said she had short, very neatly blonde hair, kind of like a little page boy. She had a very clean, crisp white blouse. So it was a very detailed description. And he said, I started to sit up. I put my legs on the side of the bed. And when I did, she disappeared.
Now, Reveal doesn't do ghost stories. And there isn't any proof anywhere that psychics actually solve crimes, even though it's well known that detectives consult with them from time to time. Needless to say, I was skeptical of this story. Uncle James's sister, Loretta, was too.
And I asked him, I said, James, are you sure you're not, what are you smoking? I said, were you asleep when you saw this vision of this girl? He started telling me all about it, and he said, no.
Did you ever suspect your brother had any involvement or
yes,
knowledge?
Yes, I did. I asked him, absolutely. I said, now, you could end up in prison. I said, you will be the first suspect.
Uncle James described intimate details of the crime scene. Some of what he said had been in the local media, and other things hadn't. We have no way of knowing how much of the story he got right, but he told it all to Darla.
Some of the details that he told me were that she was stabbed, that she was dragged and dumped, that a car brought her there. He felt that she was already dead when she arrived on Little Shepherd Trail.
What did you do with this information?
Well, the first thing I did was I wrote it all down.
And he went out there and reported this to the state police.
Darla and her aunt both say they reported what Uncle James told them to the police. I checked with the Kentucky State Police, and Uncle James was never a suspect in their investigation. They don't have any record of a James Saylor in their case file at all. No one jotted down that a local man or his family had called in with some details about the crime.
I have lost many nights' sleep over this case and this girl in the past 15 years.
Darla recognizes she became somewhat obsessed with the case. She even had a new grave marker made. She keeps the original one at her house.
And this is my bedroom. And I think I put this marker in here in 2008.
She keeps the grave marker in her nightstand next to her bed. It's just a small aluminum rectangle mounted to a metal stake. The red paint is flaking off, and engraved in white letters, it says, Unidentified Girl. Burial, June 5th, 1969.
She could not speak for herself, and no one was speaking for her. I wanted people to remember her, and she deserved a voice. So I spoke for her.
Darla wrote a book about Mountain Jane Doe, based on her uncle's visions. In 2009, she got the attention of local TV news.
Anyone who was alive in Harlan County in 1969 probably remembers the story of a young woman found stabbed to death on Pine Mountain. Nearly 40 years later, it's still not known.
This newscast changes everything. This is where the ghost story crosses over into the real world. It stirs things up in the community and brings Mountain Jane Doe back into the minds of people who remember her. One of them is Karen Stipes, the Kentucky woman we heard from earlier.
And, I watched the whole program, and then I called. It had a number at the bottom of the screen, so I called, and I told him that was my mother. And he said, no, it wouldn't have been that she was younger and didn't have any children, that it couldn't be her, so.
Karen's mother went missing in 1969, the same year Mountain Jane Doe was found. Her mom disappeared from Letcher County, right next to Harlan.
Nearly 40 years later, it's still not known who she was, where she came from, and who killed her.
Another person who happened to catch the newscast that night was a guy named Todd Matthews.
I've often said some of my best friends are dead, and people say I'm sorry, but they were dead when I met them.
Todd has a dark sense of humor. It's how he makes it through a tough job.
For the most part, my day job is finding the missing among the dead, the unidentified deceased.
Todd's got hair that's long in the back and feathered on the sides and a thick groomed mustache. He runs the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System, or NAMIS, the program that works to identify John and Jane Doe's. Over the years, NAMIS has solved more than 500 of these cases.
I found out about Harlan County Jane Doe case because of Darla's book.
He said that in my book that I wrote that no one was interested in this young girl and her murder, and he informed me that he was very interested.
Okay, here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
After Darla's book is published, Todd invites her onto a radio show he hosts about America's missing.
Welcome, Darla.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
I remember the day I first laid eyes on Darla Jackson. She was just a true Southern belle, a lovely woman, very compassionate.
Such an injustice. You know, unidentified girl, killer, never brought to justice, and just simply forgotten on the side of a hill in Harlan County.
Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of the same feelings that I've had myself for, you know, the cases that I've worked on.
Todd takes a special interest in Mountain Jane Doe's case, partly because it's his home turf. He's from Appalachian, Tennessee, a few hours' drive from Harlan.
With the Harlan County Jane Doe case, the only thing left to do in this case is to get that body out of the ground for DNA collection.
Todd goes to the only person who can have her body exhumed, the Harlan County coroner. It takes months to get a court order from a judge, and then finally, one morning in November of 2014, they're ready to dig up Mountain Jane Doe, 45 years after she went into the ground. The makeshift cemetery is just a small cluster of graves scattered on a forested hillside. Four police officers wearing gloves and heavy work boots are pulling up dirt and rocks. A group of investigators watches as debris is shoveled onto a plastic tarp. Mountain Jane Doe's case is still an active homicide investigation. These days, the detective assigned to the case is
Detective William Joshua Howard. I'm a Kentucky State Police detective. Currently assigned Post 10, which is located here in Harlan, Kentucky.
Detective Howard's police jumpsuit is streaked with mud.
I was assigned the Mountain Jane Doe case probably mid-2014. I'm not strictly a homicide detective. We work all major crimes, violent crimes.
There are enormous odds stacked against Detective Howard solving this murder. This case has been cold for decades.
You can't have a suspect until we figure out who a victim is.
And there's that part, not knowing who she is.
As soon as we know who she was, then we can figure out where she's from, people that she was associated with, and hopefully find a motive pretty quick.
That's Detective Sergeant Jackie Pickerel again. She's here too. She's swinging a pickaxe to chop through a tree root that's grown over the casket.
I would love to see a beautiful, intact skull.
That would be awesome.
That we can... recreate.
Todd and Darla are here too, watching from the sidelines. After a few hours of digging, their shovels hit something.
There's a piece of the casket.
It's fragments of a casket that rotted away years ago. Pieces of bone are pulled out one at a time. Eventually, they find a skull tightly packed in dirt and clay. They carefully remove it, take some photos, and place it in a cardboard evidence box.
The skull's been, it's collapsed a little bit, but he could probably rinse that off easily. Good job, man.
The remains will be shipped to the University of North Texas in Fort Worth. That's where NAMIS is based, together with the Center for Human Identification.
And this is the area where they do some of the bone cut, the DNA lab.
A few months later, we meet up with Todd in Fort Worth. He shows us how remains like Mountain Jane Doe's are handled.
And you'll see it through these windows. Most of them are closed most of the time.
It's Bone Cut Tuesday. Behind sealed glass, we can see technicians extracting DNA. A woman in a lab coat, gloves, and mask cuts into a section of bone with a small electrical saw. The bone is then pulverized and mixed with a chemical in a test tube.
And it's quite a complicated process. It's nothing like you see on CSI. It's nothing that's fast and instantaneous. The genetic code is not a barcode. It takes time, you know, to go through this process.
Once the genetic code is extracted, it's put into a federal database that has thousands of missing persons cases. Todd Matthews is keeping his fingers crossed that one of those missing people will match with Mountain Jane Doe.
It will be either a cold hit, a direct comparison, or nothing. You know, maybe we don't have a missing person that matches this person in the system yet.
But even if there is a match waiting in the system, it can take months or even a year to get DNA results. There's a backlog because there are too many boxes of bones and not enough scientists.
The living victims of missing and unidentified persons cases are the families because they're going through this tragedy every day. You know, a traditional funeral, 3 days, you're buried, and then you find ways to adapt your new life. In a missing persons case, it's like a funeral that goes on for years, sometimes decades.
Back in Harlan, it's been 7 months since investigators dug up the skull and bones from the hillside grave. Finally, Darla gets the call from Todd she's been waiting for.
Hello, Darla. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
We do have some news.
Okay.
And right. I know that you've sat by that grave many times.
Yes.
You've even shared a glass of wine and poured it into the grave, and I know that.
Yeah.
And I want to apologize because I couldn't tell you anything sooner. The remains that were exhumed that day in Harlan County were not the remains of our Harlan County Jane Doe.
Oh, no. I'm in shock. I'm terribly disappointed, but I don't know what to say. How did it happen, and where is she?
Investigators thought they were exhuming Mountain Jane Doe, but they dug up the wrong body. The unidentified girl marker was on the wrong grave. I asked Darla how she's taking the news.
It's never been easy, but it's never been boring. I gotta hand that to the case. Right now, what I'm thinking is to get the right grave, we had to dig up the wrong grave. I know she's there. She's in that cemetery and she's in that area. So now we just have to find her. This is just another step. Now we gotta do it again. It's time to exhume again. She's there.
She may be there, but will officials find her? And how did they dig up the wrong body in the first place? We'll go back to the gravesite when we return. This is Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.